This is LiveMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editor's Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So the first story we discuss is the big boardroom battle between Ratan Tata and Cyrus Mistry, and you know what it means for corporate India and for a company like the Tata Group.
It's an interesting battle at very many levels. 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, because 2011 was when the announcement was made. 5 years ago, when it was announced that Cyrus Mistry would take over in 2012 from Ratan Tata, mm-hmm. he was a surprise choice. No one thought, or no one even imagined, that he would end up as chairman of Tata Sons. And he seemed to be, at that point in time, Ratan Tata's hand-picked successor.
Right.
And obviously, events of the last few days have shown that things have gone horribly wrong now. Right, there is a lot of mudslinging that's going on right now. I can't think of any other word to describe right. what's happening. So Cyrus, in an email to the Tata Group, which has been leaked to the media, and we also carried it, has leveled all sorts of allegations at how the group right. functioned. And in response, they've just called it malicious. But I'm sure that over a period of time, we will get to see specific charges being leveled against Mistry also. And so I don't want to get into this discussion of what one side is saying or what the other side is saying. But I want to make a few observations. The first one is that one of the biggest losers in all this is the group. One of the biggest losers in all this is Mr. Tata himself. Yeah. Right? Mistry might have lost a job, but Ratan Tata has lost the halo, or at least his halo has been dented. And that is not a good thing, because the board and the man stood for something, and now there are questions being asked about those very things. The second point I want to make is the nature of what I'd like to call trusteeship, which is a fairly new concept even for Indian family businesses, but there are a few of them which have adopted that, where they see themselves as trustees who take care of the interests of all shareholders, but also work for the betterment of society and everything else. And then even some groups in the South are slowly moving towards this concept. You must remember that the group that's always done this is the Tatas, right? Which is why you have the Tata Trust. So clearly, it makes sense, or it's clear now, that it makes sense for the person who heads Tata Sons to also head Tata Trust.
Right.
Or it makes sense for the person who heads Tata Trust to completely have faith in and have a great relationship with the person who heads Tata Sons. The only other time that you've had different chairmen for Tata Trust and Tata Sons was when JRD Tata was the chairman of Tata Trust and Ratan Tata was the chairman of Tata Sons. This was after JRD stepped down for a few years. He was chairman of Tata Trust till his death, and then Ratan Tata took over that role.
Right.
In Cyrus Mistry and Ratan Tata, you again had two very different people heading the trust and the company, the holding company. And I'm not sure that that works, especially with the trust being such a dominant shareholder and probably having a different vision, a different view of how business needs to be done, what the priorities are, how to deal with employees, how all decisions are not just clinical decisions which just take numbers into account and nothing else.
Right.
Because I remember this discussion I once had with the patriarch of a very large and very respected South Indian group, and we were discussing returns. At some point in the conversation, he looked at me and said, "Your frames of reference are so Western." He said, "The only thing you're interested in is numbers." He said, "You look at me, I've delivered good numbers. May not be great numbers, but I've delivered good numbers. But what your calculations are not taking into account is what we've done to society, how we've dealt with our employees, how we've managed this whole thing. And maybe there is merit in that." And I have a feeling that perhaps Mistry wasn't Tata enough when it came to this perspective of trusteeship. Sure, there might have been all sorts of other issues. He's alleged interference. He's alleged that he was almost a lame duck chairman. In return, those guys have said he's aloof. He didn't know. He had this coterie of guys and they were doing stuff. But ignore all that. Maybe fundamentally, behind everything all, maybe he wasn't Tata enough.
But he was handpicked himself by Ratan Tata,
it's difficult, right? So I don't know who it will be. But whoever you get, I think, needs to understand the need for that complete alignment in their heads.
Right.
On what the group stands for, what it wants to achieve. Because I agree with what the South Indian patriarch told me. I do not believe that the end objective has to be just numerical. I do not believe that the end objective needs to be purely financial. There needs to be a bigger purpose to business. And maybe that's the one underlying thing that was responsible for whatever happened. Sure, there was a personality clash, all the other stuff that we discussed happened. But maybe, just maybe, at the bottom of it all, is this difference of opinion on what the purpose is.
Right. Also, I was reading somewhere that, you know, in India, we don't know how to handle these exits. For instance, even the Rajan's exit and now this mystery's exit.
No, listen, Nandita, I don't think this is India. Happens everywhere. Right? So let me give you the example of Citigroup, where it happened not once, but twice. So the first time was when this whole Sandy Weill and Chuck Prince and, you know, here was a man who had a designated successor whom he identified. And then a few years down the line, he was working to have that person removed. Right? So you look at Citigroup, also Vikram Pandit's exit again happened under reasonably similar circumstances. You look at Disney, where succession planning has gone wrong even more recently. I mean, it's happening. It just happened as we speak. So it's not just an Indian phenomenon. It happens everywhere in the world, right? So I don't think it's a question of, oh, Indians don't know how to deal with succession. No one knows how to deal with succession because look at the variables involved. One, nature of successor. Two, nature of predecessor. Three, the environment and how it's changed, because it's changing at a tremendous pace. And four, alignment when it comes to the ultimate purpose. And it's very difficult to assess all that. So a lot of these things go wrong. Sure, some of them go right, but a lot of them go wrong, and not just in India. So don't call it an Indian thing.
Okay, it's complicated. So the next story is the World Bank came up with its ease of doing business survey, and India has only moved up one notch. And it's probably due to the criterion of post-filing index, as the report says.
Yes, I want to give two sides of this thing. One, as a newsroom, we think there are a lot of changes that have happened in this country over the last 3 years. A lot of changes are happening in this country, and we speak in terms of policy, and that many of them are for the better. They may not be the ideal, right? GST, it would have been ideal had it been a far more simpler kind of consensus that had been arrived at. But the fact is, you have got some sort of consensus. It is better than the system that was there previously. It is not the ideal kind of thing, but it will still make life reasonably simpler. I'll just give that as one example. So I think there are a lot of things that have happened. There are a lot of things that are happening. So it has, in some ways, become easier to do business in this country. I do believe, and I am convinced, that we have a far more friendly environment for business now than we did a few years back. So that's the first thing. So there can be no doubts on that. Then we come to this, which is actually a very technical criteria related to taxes. And I don't want to stick to just the technical criteria related to taxes. I want to step back. And I think tax and the way the Indian tax department functions and the way the Indian finance ministry has been happy to let the tax department function for obvious reasons, because they need money, right, to fund all the social programs that this country desperately needs. All of these are very suboptimal. Right, the way the tax department functions, the tax regime, the way the finance ministry allows the tax department to function is all suboptimal. I think there needs to be radical rethink that perspective. We've been far too happy to take refuge in procedure and process and all these things and say this is how it will work. I don't think that makes sense. I think Mr. Modi, who's shown himself capable of really taking strong measures, needs to completely review what needs to be done when it comes to the tax side of things. And, you know, I don't mean this very business kind of demand that, you know, bring the tax rates down, do that and all that. What I'm speaking of is simplification. What I'm speaking of is an end to unnecessary litigation. What I'm speaking of is better monitoring to widen the tax net without burdening existing taxpayers. And what I'm speaking of is a more efficient system for things like returns, which is one of the things that the World Bank has really commented on. Because I think the emphasis right now is on optimizing and maximizing tax revenue. It's a good objective to have, but I think it's an end objective. So you need to have a process where you can monitor better. You need to have a process where you can widen the tax net better. You need to have a process where you make it easier for people who are paying taxes to function. And if they've paid excess, you have to make sure that the refunds go out in time, the returns go out in time and everything else. And I don't think enough of that is being done. So sure, the government may have a different view on this. They might feel that they've been unfairly done by. And I think that's true to some extent, because I think things have definitely improved, and not by the one rank that the Doing Business Index shows. I personally feel that India's rank should be in the double digits, and not even in the high double digits, in the moderate double digits, right? Around 60 or something. I definitely do not think it should be where it is. But that said, tax has been our Achilles heel for a long time. It continues to be. It's something we have to get our hands around if we want to really make this country a good place to do business in.
Moving on, the next story is Airtel has again slashed its, you know, tariffs and has come out with new data plans, you know, in a bid.
This will keep happening, right? Because clearly data is the future. Everyone's consuming data like mad. We have no idea on the amount of data people will use. They will use it tremendous amount of data, right, especially if it is priced right. But the question is really, what is the ideal business model for telcos? At some point in time, you have to realize that maybe data is going to become a commodity, in which case, what are you going to charge for? Are you going to charge for the content? But then do you have any say in that? Because right now, you can, of course, charge a carrier fee in some ways, right? I mean, you have a pipeline, right. Anything can go through the pipeline, but because you are the person with the pipeline, you can charge a premium for it. Except that there are so many people with pipelines now, or at least there are three big guys with pipelines now. I'm just giving you a number, but obviously, there are three or four people who have these pipelines. Some of them have pipelines which are in the making. Some part of it is there. The rest of it is being built. So clearly, it's not one pipeline that's there. There are multiple pipelines that are there. So at some point in time, it is going to become a commodity. And you're going to try and see what else you can get into. Mm. So it's an interesting convergence of the business model. Companies call it various things. Reliance Jio obviously is doing a lot more on the content side. I'm sure the other telcos will also start doing it. There are also other aspects to it, right? It's all not just content. There's also commerce. There's fintech. Mm. Airtel, for instance, has got its own payment back plans, because all telcos have a cash box, as it's called, crude accounting language. So anyone with a cash box can effectively function as a bank or a limited bank to some extent, which is what the Reserve Bank of India has given them permission to do, provided you meet certain criteria, which Airtel's done. So it'll be interesting to see how this whole space evolves. I don't think the ultimate fight is going to be about tariffs. Mm. I do think some part of the ultimate fight will be about quality of service, where at this point in time, at least Airtel and Reliance are coming at it from various sides, right? Because Airtel and in fact, a lot of the other incumbent telcos, I'm using Airtel's name because it's the largest and also because you asked me this question about Airtel. But if you look at Airtel and the other incumbent telcos, they haven't exactly covered themselves with glory in terms of their service. It's uniformly bad. Like we pointed out in an opinion piece a couple of years back, I think, we don't have any best telcos. We only have best of worst ones, right? Okay. Reliance, of course, has never traditionally done very well in a consumer-facing business and is having some teething trouble with its own broadband operation, which it's launched. So we'll have to see how both sides do on the service front. The service will be important, but I think ultimately it'll be a question of the other things that you do and the quality of the business model you build around that. Will be pretty revolutionary even from the global perspective, right? Because there are no templated business models that you can follow. So it'd be interesting to see how that evolves.
Yes, we'll have to wait and watch. So the last story we're discussing is how Flipkart Sachin Bansal is creating this lobby group to further the interests of startups.
Trying to create a lobby group and presumably to further the interests of local startups. And Indian startups. Not a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are various legal, regulatory, other issues. What does this newsroom believe in? We believe in free markets. Free people, right? Fundamentally. So I think our legal regime, our legislative regime, maybe our policies, all of these have to evolve, keeping pace with new technology. You look at some of these fundamentally disruptive new technologies, they have the power to challenge these laws. Everything from taxation to taxi services, right? Right? And somehow we have to evolve a law and a policy and the rules which do not favor one side over another. And from that perspective, I think it's very important to have a discussion on these matters. I think all these startups were pretty much fighting with each other, were not really speaking in one voice. Mm. So I think it's important to have someone speak in that one voice. I'm not saying that they're always going to ask for the right things. because obviously the nature of a lobby group is that it's only interested in furthering the interests of its own members, right, which is fair. But then you have enough of other lobby groups also, right? So e-commerce guys you have, you also have the brick and mortar guys. So I think the government, obviously in this case, a lot of the lobbying is going to happen to the DIPP, which works under the Commerce Ministry. So they will obviously have to evolve rules which are common, which are free, which are fair, and which above all acknowledge new technologies, disruptive new technologies, and realize that the world has changed. I mean, there's no point in us sticking to old laws related to taxi services, like I said, right? I mean, the world has changed. Uber is a fundamentally disruptive model. So I think those things will change.
Great. So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter or Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.